Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. Today is Tuesday, October 17th. No, it's Tuesday, October 7th. I was already thinking 2014. And I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, where it's a lovely autumn day. And we just had, there's a day in Florida, especially here in Clearwater, where it stops being hot and the cold front comes down from the north and everything cools off. It stops being humid and suddenly it's cool and we start having winter. We start having beautiful, beautiful winter. And in fact, we're going to be talking about flowers today, and Florida really starts blooming. Everything grows in the wintertime because in the summertime, it's just too hot. All of the plants just kind of curl up and stay cool and don't grow. And then things start happening in the fall, and then we get beautiful flowers over the winter. And it's just like, it's a whole different pattern than the northern hemisphere, which I'm more accustomed to because I grew up in California. Anyway, so we're going to be talking about flowers today. We're going to be talking about slow flowers, local flowers, sustainable organic flowers. And my guest is Deborah Prinzing. She's the founder and creative director of slowflowers.com. And she's also the author of a book by the same name and also the 50 Mile Bouquet. And we're going to be talking right now, as soon as I introduce her, about how you can buy flowers from local sustainable organic producers, which are totally different than the florist industry. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for being here. Hello.
Someone with a good name.
There she is. We have two Deborahs today. So
that's
if anybody
right.
says Deborah here, we'll both go, what?
Well, thanks for having me on. It's a great topic and perfect for Toxic Free Talk Radio, I think.
I think so, too. So first of all, tell us what slow flowers are.
Well, anybody who's in, followed the food world knows the term slow food, which has been around for over a decade, kind of implying that we're shrinking our transportation footprint in how we source the food we eat, and we also are looking at the practices on how that food is produced. So the parallel in flowers is really evident, and it's only been just recently that people are starting to view flowers as an important part of agriculture in the U.S. and consequently asking questions about the flowers they purchase and whether they've been grown within a 50-mile radius or a 100-mile radius versus from another continent. So slow food is sort of a nod to that idea that we want to, if we do love flowers in our lives, we want to source them closely to where we live and we want them to be produced in a sustainable way.
I totally agree. So how did you get interested in this subject?
Well, I've been a garden writer for almost 20 years and, covered many kind of consumer-oriented topics about design and growing food and ornamentals. But in about 2006, I began to meet some local flower farmers in my area in Washington State. And then I lived in California after that, so I met lots of flower farmers in California. And I began to realize that they are trying to make a living off their land and revitalize the broken U.S. floral industry. 80% of cut flowers that we purchase in the U.S. are imported, which makes no
wow.
sense. It's a perishable product. It's insane.
Yes.
So the farmers that I met just really inspired me to tell their stories, and they're they're really committed to sustainable practices, to permaculture, to trying to have good pollinator sources for the insects on their land, and they're also growing beautiful flowers that, the consumer world wants, especially the wedding industry. That's sort of driving this whole thing.
I looked at your website, slowflowers.com, and I was really surprised to see how many resources you have there. And even I live in Florida, and there were a half a dozen places that I could go to, not just right down the street from me, but within driving distance. Like I live in Clearwater and you had one in Sarasota, and I just happened to be going to Sarasota. But if I was getting married, so Sarasota is not that far away that I couldn't hire that florist, especially if one has these values. And, and it was very encouraging to me to see, and we'll talk about some of those later in the show. As we talk about your website and all that's available. So So tell us more about the floral industry. You called it broken. I think that that's probably a good word. And I think that flowers are such a lovely thing and such a natural thing. And I know that I'm always happy to have fresh flowers sitting on my desk.
Right. You know, and if you're a gardener, or you live next door to one, or you have one in your life, probably you know that the practices that were used to grow those flowers that you can, like the true 50-ma bouquet or the too slow flower bouquet is one from your own yard.
Right.
But not everybody, as you were saying about Florida, you know, you're just starting to get into your happy garden moments,
in
the fall. Not everybody has that.
I can't even go out in my garden in the summertime because you can't breathe. It's so humid.
That's tough. I know. Well, and that's why so much foliage is grown in Florida, because the foliage industry is ideally suited for the growing conditions in Florida. That's a wonderful little secret. But the broken part of the industry really dates back to 1991 when the U.S. government enacted the Andean Trade Preference Agreement. And that was our so-called war on drugs. And that that policy then lifted trade duties on flowers from South American countries. And that was sort of like a blank check to let, Colombia and Ecuador and other countries in South America boost their floral production and dump that product on our marketplace. And American flower farmers could not fight that wave. And it's been a scary battle ever since. And mainly because, you know, even if flowers aren't labeled organic in the U.S., they're grown under EPA regulations, which are very strict, and they're grown, of course, with U.S. labor standards, which are very much, they're not perfect, but they're better than what we see in a lot of other countries.
Well, tell us, I do want to hear about the EPA growing standards, because this is something we talk about organic on this show, and we talk about sustainability. You mentioned permaculture. We talk about permaculture, and I would really like to know. I mean, I've had people on that talk at length about the organic food standards. Mm-hmm. So if there are standards that have to do with growing flowers, let's talk about them.
Sure. Well, the word organic has basically been co-opted by the USDA. They have the power to, give that designation to a food grower who meets their standards. So certified organic in terms of a capital O, that's what you see in food. There are something like 850 flower farms in the U.S. that have certified organic designation from the USDA. Many of them are food farmers who grow a small portion of flowers, either for farmers market sales or CSA boxes, which, is kind of a bonus. If you get food in your CSA box, you might get some zinnias. But it's really tough for commercial cut flower growers to get that USDA designation because, let's face it, food production is often a monoculture. Flower production is usually, there might be 100 varieties of flowers on that farm. So they're sort of a crop-by-crop needs for handling pests and diseases. And most flower farmers I know can't financially justify getting that organic designation. So they use the term sustainable, and many of them are using organic practices such as crop rotation and beneficial insects and insecticidal soaps and, that kind of good gardening practices that anybody who gardens would do. If there are EPA-approved chemicals, I guess you would say, a lot of them are going down in intensity over the years, just because I think EPA is getting pressure to approve less harmful chemicals. So you really have to. It's sort of invisible. You really have to talk to the farmer and the grower and ask them what their practices are, unless they are certified organic. But
right,
that's not.
We need to go to break. So we'll talk more when we come back.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
It's okay. My guest today is, let's start over. Jeez. I usually do this much better. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Deborah Prinzing. She's the founder and creative director of slowflowers.com. And we're talking about the floral industry and how you can get less toxic flowers. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Deborah Prinzing. She's founder and creative director of slowfoods.com, and we're talking about flowers and the floral industry. Deborah, can you tell us just about some of the toxic chemicals that are used? Obviously, there's probably pesticides being used within the floral industry, but are there any other chemicals that we might not be thinking of?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the biggest ones is formaldehyde, and I'm really frustrated to see what's happened in the floral industry. This is at the flower shop level. You know that green foam?
Wow.
That green brick of foam that maybe
yeah.
sometimes comes with your arrangement? That is a complete carcinogenic, and it has been around for 60 years. The generic name is floral foam. There's three or four manufacturers who produce it in the U.S. It doesn't break down in landfills. It's not biodegradable, and a lot of people have skin or lung issues if they're working with it daily. I mean, if you're just getting it, you know, delivered to you once a year from your great aunt, it's probably not going to hurt you. But it's still going to go in the landfill.
Well, formaldehyde there was a absolute official proclamation that formaldehyde causes cancer. It's not in question anymore. It
wow.
causes
yeah.
cancer.
Well,
that just came out like 2 months ago.
That's really, I mean, that's tragic, but it's also good that that statement is out there, because finally the floral industry is putting their heads up and saying, okay, maybe this isn't such a great product. Yes, it holds that when you punch a stem into that brick of foam, it doesn't budge. You know, so it,
right.
from, designers think that they must use it. But I just interviewed a woman who has developed a plant-based 100% compostable alternative to the foam,
wow.
and it's just being introduced to the market this fall. It's made of cocoa fiber and red algae as a sort of plant component. It's called Floral Soil, and if anyone wants to read about it, there's an article on my website, deborahprinzing.com, that I can send you the link to. But it's exciting because, you know, she's like an outsider. She's come at it as a life scientist, saying there's got to be a better way to meet the needs of an industry than to use chemicals. So there's that whole green chemical movement is behind
right.
it, and it's very exciting.
Right, right. Yes, that's very good.
Yeah, it's good for you and your home, and it's also good for the environment. And I'm predicting by next year we'll start seeing florists making a statement to their consumers saying, I no longer use foam. I'm using green practices.
I think that that's really good. I'm very encouraged to see how much it's developed since, well, I started 30 years ago talking
sure.
about toxic chemicals and consumer products. But it really... looking at it from a consumer viewpoint, I can say to people, well, here's this one product that doesn't have toxic chemicals, and here's another one product. But what I'm excited about is whole industries looking at where are the toxic chemicals and the industry itself moving in a direction of being less toxic, as you're talking
Absolutely.
About.
I mean, even things like just how the flowers are packaged, you know, with not using plastic but using cellulose fiber-based products, that's the waste that we're seeing. And of course, a lot of it's synthetic, maybe not technically toxic, but it's going to sit in the landfill and not biodegrade.
So if you had delivered to you from an ordinary florist a dozen roses with mm-hmm. in a box with ribbons on it and mm-hmm. all of that, are there any chemicals used, like preservatives or something? Like if you were to open the box and take a big whiff, are you getting a big breath of chemicals?
Well, that's a very, I mean, I can just picture that in my mind, because that's like the classic gift of flowers that
mm-hmm.
we've been conditioned
mm-hmm.
to think is a show of love. First of all, those roses were more likely than not grown in South America. And at Valentine's Day, only about 3% of roses sold are domestically grown.
Wow.
Rest of the year, that might move a few points, but the rose industry has been completely dominated by countries near the equator. And they may call those roses sustainably grown. There are some of these eco labels that are coming out of South America. And that might...
Let me just interrupt you for a minute about that, because I do see those labels in places that I shop. I was just thinking about the difference between an eco label in a foreign country versus the whole concept of the 50-mile bouquet.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, I mean, when a country or an industry in a different country decide to come up with their own eco-label, it's really hard to know what they're considering, is green. A lot of them have more of a fair trade component to them, like, you know, we give workers lunch breaks or, you know, we allow people right. to bring their children to after-school childcare, which are all great things. But it's you really have to dig deep to find out what that label means. One's called Rainforest Alliance. One's called Vera Flora. But the bottom line is that when flowers come into Miami, that box of roses you just described, they come right down the street from you. They land at Miami International Airport, and even if they are labeled sustainable, they are inspected for bugs, because the only thing that our customs is looking for are pests that could be damaging to U.S. food crops. So because of that, most of those flowers have been drenched in or sprayed, like fogged, with fumigant to keep the bugs, to kill the bugs. So regardless of what their practice is, they still have to get sprayed to enter the U.S., which is kind of contradictory to what their label is. To me, is the opposite of showing love. and you notice when you get those roses, what do they smell like? They have no fragrance.
That's right. I've told the story before about how the first time I ate an organic orange, and it actually smelled like an orange. And mm-hmm. I used to think prior to that day that what I was smelling when I smelled an orange was an orange. And no, it was fumigant.
Oh, my goodness. Right. And, right. It's kind of got that sort of almost like a metallic or moldy smell that you can't quite picture. Well, the reason that the roses don't smell at all is that breeding has gone so far in long-stem roses that they are bred for, I don't know if this is actually a term, but shipability. So the fragrance disappears when you're breeding for thicker petals. And so the whole idea of sticking your nose in a bouquet to smell it is so old-fashioned now. You really have to buy organic flowers or flowers from a boutique kind of artisan grower who's growing heirloom varieties that do have fragrance.
Yes, and we'll talk more about this when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is another Deborah Prinzing. She's the founder and creative director of slowflowers.com and the author of Slow Flowers and the 50-Mile Bouquet. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Deborah Prinzing, founder and creative director of slowflowers.com. So, Deborah, I know that in your book, Slow Flowers, it looks like a beautiful book. I haven't seen a copy, but it's the kind of book I would like. I know that you go through the seasons and talk about celebrating the seasons in different ways, so that it's not just like when you go to a florist, you see the same thing no matter what time of year it is. And this is a whole different approach to how we think about flowers. So tell us more about that.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's really what our grandmothers did and what our parents might have done. This whole idea of clipping flowers when they are naturally blooming. And it's very parallel to food. When you mentioned the orange, I was thinking of my example like that, which is, the difference between a tomato right off the vine in the middle of summer, where it's like tastes like summer, it's like the real flavor, versus the shrink wrapped, grocery store tomato in January. Mm-hmm. And similarly, I think that the people, are given all flowers all the time as a choice, and so we've forgotten, perhaps, what their true blooming season is, unless you're a gardener, and gardeners are more conscious and observant of that. And it's really become an interesting aspect of choosing flowers in our lives, so that if we want to live in the seasons, then we maybe are willing to take something that's perhaps a little, like for me, I live in Seattle. It's twigs and conifers in the winter. You know, I don't have I don't have a lot of exotic blooms to play with. But it helps, to me, it's almost like a meditation practice. It helps me be conscious of where I am in the cycle of the year.
In the cycle of the year, the cycle of life. And it's it's just like eating seasonal foods. It's like bringing the outdoors in and in whatever the season is.
Right.
And
it might just be a little dish of it might be a little dish of I don't know, pods that you've collected on a walk or something like that. Now, of course, we all cheat and augment. That's what houseplants are for. So, you know, I'm not saying that people have to completely deprive themselves of floral beauty. You know, you could have an orchid indoors or some kind of beautiful begonia, something that's naturally happy in your indoor environment because it's a potted plant. It's not a cut flower.
Right. I one of the things that I love to do that I don't do it so much anymore living in Florida just because we have other flowers growing in the wintertime. But when I lived in Northern California, every winter I would force narcissus.
Right.
Paper whites.
Perfect
and
example.
It was just a thing that I did. It was like, those are my winter flowers.
And that fragrance is pretty amazing, right?
It is. I just love it. And it was just such an experience to, and it was something that I really learned how to do. And I'll just give a tip if any of you don't know how to do this. The best way, if you want to force a bulb in the wintertime, is to get a vase. Like you would, you can take your flower vases that you're not putting cut flowers in and put some pebbles down in the bottom, about an inch or however many you want, actually. And then what you do is you, put the bulb down so just so that the roots are going down into the pebbles. And then the sides of the vase will hold up the stem as the bulb grows. And then you have a narcissus that looks beautiful in this beautiful vase, and it stands up instead of falling over. It took me a while to learn that, but it's like the best trick.
Well, and the way you described it also makes me remember what I like about that technique is that you actually see the roots as they crawl through the pebbles, and there's something kind of organic about that to realize, oh wow, this is a living plant that has roots.
Yes, and you just see it the roots going down into the pebbles, and you see the stem come up, and you see the bud, and you just go through the whole growing cycle. With it, and you have these beautiful fragrant flowers. And I try to plant them around Thanksgiving, and then they're blooming around winter solstice and Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's just a delightful thing to do. So being floral doesn't always mean having cut flowers. It could mean doing something like forcing a bulb. And amaryllis is another gorgeous thing to grow in the wintertime. And so even though there might not be winter flowers outside your window, they certainly could be inside. So we were coming up in a couple of minutes on the break, but until we get there, tell us just like season by season some examples of how flowers change by the season and what you might be looking for.
Sure, and it obviously it's such a regional and local distinction of where you live, which is really kind of what we love and celebrate about our country, is that you can have the tropicals in Florida and you can have, the prairie plants of grasses in the Midwest, and you can have, you know, flowering trees in the spring in Washington, D.C. So, you know, as you kind of have, we have these touchstones of place and time through plants that often our earliest memories of childhood have to do with a plant in playing under the lavender bush in my grandmother's garden, you know, that sort of thing. I really do liken it to meditation and a sort of conscious observance of nature. So what anyone can do is once a month even take a walk and look at what's blooming in your neighborhood. And if you live in a city, go to a garden center and look at what's blooming in the potted plants that they're selling. And you'll start to reintroduce yourself to the conscious choice of living in the season. It's a fun practice. And when I did the book Soul Flowers, that was my goal. I designed a bouquet every week using what was growing in my own garden or what I sourced from local flower farmers. And it was It took a discipline. It took a discipline to say, yes. You know what, I'm going to have a quiet bouquet in January because it's a quiet month and a lot of stuff is dormant.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The vivid craziness in August, I can hardly wait for that, but I want it to happen when those dahlias are in the fields blooming and those sunflowers are in the fields blooming. Not in January, where you wouldn't expect to see a sunflower. It would seem out of place. So that's sort of the inspiration for that book, but anybody can adopt that. I have a friend this year who decided to do 100 days of bouquets, and she posted a photo on her Facebook page every day for 100 straight days, which I think is amazing discipline. But sometimes it was just a dish of a single camellia that was floating in water because that's all she found that day. It doesn't have to be some, over-the-top bridal bouquet.
Right. And, I love hearing you say all these things because one of the things that we talk about a lot on this show, because it's one of my favorite subjects, is reorienting yourself to nature mm-hmm. as opposed to just living within the industrial world.
Love it.
And
yeah.
What we're talking about here is using flowers as the medium through which you do that. And by bringing your awareness to what's going on out in nature and bringing that inside, it shifts the way you think. We need to go to break. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd, and my guest today is Deborah Prinzing. We're talking about slow flowers, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd, and my guest today is another Deborah Prinzing, founder and creative director of slowflowers.com. And I am on her website now. I've been looking around at her website because I actually love to buy flowers. I used to grow flowers in California when I had a garden there.
Oh,
but
wow. Uh-huh.
Moving to Florida, it's a whole different way of growing. Different things grow at different times of year, different kinds of soil. It's a whole shift. But I used to go out into my yard and just cut my flowers. And that would be my ideal. But I would also, I'm always looking for local places to buy local flowers, as opposed to going to a florist. And
right.
I actually, the more I learn about the floral industry, the less I even want to have florist flowers.
It's interesting. The reason I started the Slow Flowers website really is to create a place for consumers to go to find flower farmers and florists, floral designers, flower shops who are sourcing domestically or locally. Because there is no standard, there's no national standard for determining the origin of flowers. Unlike food, which has a country of origin labeling law, which is called the COOL law, COOL, that's not enforced in flowers. I think that's because the mindset is, well, we don't eat flowers, so why should we care so much about where they came from?
But the whole thing, I just want to reiterate what you said earlier about fumigating the flowers mm-hmm. that come in from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not going to happen with a USA grown flower.
Right. And that's just part of That's part of the environmental concern. I mean, there's also the whole jet fuel, use of jet fuel to ship something from another continent that it just, they kind of have these problems layer upon themselves. In some states, Deborah, there are locally grown branding programs. For example, there's a Fresh from Florida program that I know.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's called Florida Fresh. And I know that one of the members of my site, Albin Hagstrom and Son, which is a foliage farm in Pearson, Florida, which is north of Orlando, they put that label on all of their product. They don't sell to the consumer. They're selling to grocery stores and wholesalers and floral designers. But mm-hmm. That I asked them to send you some foliage. Hopefully you'll receive it today. This will be a new challenge for you, making a whole arrangement out of just foliage.
That will be a challenge. Mm-hmm. But, I was just thinking about that because right now what I have in my garden is foliage.
Right. Well, it's lush. You probably have that lush tropical look. Well, so there's that Florida Fresh label. There are labels like that in California, in Alaska, in Wisconsin, in Illinois. A lot of states have it, and all those labels were developed to support food farming. And now the floral industry has kind of piggybacked on that and said, hey, wait a minute, we're agriculture too. We're going to use that voluntary labeling program. We're going to put that on our sleeves of our bunches and our bouquets and our boxes and let consumers in our state know that this was homegrown, you know, locally grown. But if you don't have access to that, the slowflowers.com website will allow you to search state by state, city by city, or even by zip code to find a florist who will fulfill your request for seasonal and local flowers in an arrangement you order. And if they can't do that, say you contact someone in New York City in December, they probably can't source locally. They'll tell you that they can at least source domestically from perhaps Florida or California. So it's a beginning. It's really an education tool to begin to educate the consumer and the florist that this is a concern. People want to know the source of their flowers.
They do. And actually, you know, during the last break, my box of foliage arrived.
No kidding.
And,
awesome.
No kidding. And it's being opened even as we speak. I have somebody here who's helping me open the box.
Perfect
this is
timing.
Exciting. It's a big box, too. Let's see.
Well, yeah. So this Alban Hagstrom is a third generation foliage farm. And I asked them to tell me what their sustainable practices were.
Yeah.
Because they've been growing, actually, they're five generations. They've been growing in Florida since 1928.
I have to interrupt you and tell you what he sent.
Tell me.
A beautiful, bring it over here, Larry. This beautiful, big, gorgeous fall wreath made out of, it looks like, magnolia leaves.
Yes.
And other kind of greens that are partially green and partially kind of cream colored. And it's just gorgeous. And then he sent like three little bouquets where they actually are greens put together like a bouquet. And so it has some ferns, but then it has some like eucalyptus stems and different stems of different things that, that you could put them together in a vase. And I'm going to do this. And the different colors and shapes of the stems themselves fill in for the fact that there isn't a flower there, but there's variety. I'm trying to figure out how to describe this because it really looks like a bouquet of flowers, but there's no flowers in it. It has that beauty and that variety. It's not just a bunch of ferns or something like that.
I love hearing that. That's your 50 shades of green, and now you know it's not just monochromatic.
This is gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous and absolutely high quality, and it smells fresh when I open the box. It smells like live plants, and the wreath is just it. I mean, if I were to look at this wreath in a store, I would just go, "Oh, I want that! I want that!"
Oh well, Eric Hagstrom, the great grandson of the owner, told me he was going to send you a box of goodies, but he didn't tell me about the wreath. So that's exciting. They do.
This is going on my front door.
Well, this is an example of a conventional grower who obviously the great-great-grandfathers probably were organic, but then, of course, like everybody else in agriculture, they moved into the chemical world, and now they're, like in the 60s, and now they're trying to reinvent their company to not be dependent on chemicals. And one of the things that Alban Hagstrom and Son does is use botanical insecticides so that they're made from naturally extracted plant toxins. And so they're not harmless. They're not harmful to humans, but they will perhaps be a natural toxin for a pest.
Yes.
Which is the term is called pyrethrin, P-Y-R-E-T-H-R-I-N. So it's something that's, luckily the organic science world has figured out a non-chemical treatment to control pests, which for a large farmer is an issue. So I'm really glad that you're holding it in your hand and you know that it's safe to put on your front door and in your vase.
Yes, I mean, I really, these three bouquets that he sent as soon as we're off the show, I'm going to go get my largest vase and put them in a gorgeous, I'm going to mix them all up and put them on the center of my dining table because they really are beautiful. They're beautiful.
Oh, good. You'll have to send me a picture and I'll post it on Facebook.
I will. I have to go out this afternoon, but when I come back, I'll take a picture.
We didn't orchestrate this any more perfectly. That's so great. But, I think that just natural expression of happiness that you're sharing on the air is how most people respond to flowers. We love the way that they put a smile on our face and add a, some kind of sort of sensory response. But
they do.
It's so hard to know how they were grown and where they were grown. You really have to get lucky, and that's what I'm hoping to do, is to just connect more consumers who want safe flowers to find people who are growing and selling them in their own community.
You're doing for flowers what I've been doing for consumer products all these years, is that I'm looking for how can I connect the consumer with the producer of safe products. And so now what you've done is that you've taken the category of flowers and you've done all the legwork for that. You're just doing exactly what I've been doing. And I'm so grateful, and I'm going to put you right in my flower section so that people can easily find you and find these people who are groundbreaking, so to speak, and coming up with ways to produce flowers and make them beautiful. I mean, flowers are beautiful by themselves, but the whole idea of having them be natural and restoring them to their natural state and their natural character and their seasonal character, and not having flowers be
like in a commodity,
the industrial, an industrial commodity. That's what florist flowers are, an industrial commodity. Flowers of nature are they're their own thing, and each one is unique, and each place and each time has their own expression of nature in the beauty of flowers and foliage, and this is just, I'm just so happy you're doing this. Obviously you can tell.
Well, it makes me, thank you. It's so nice to talk to someone who's already, pioneered this model, and I do think that this, what you're doing with consumer products and what I'm trying to do with flowers, we're seeing this cultural shift in the consumer marketplace to ask these questions in every single category. It's happening in fashion. It's happening in home furnishing. And it's maybe, for some of us, it's like, why did it take so long? But at least it's happening. And I think, this morning I got an alert on my news item that said that there was an article about on Yahoo about the New York International Bridal Week, which is happening next week. They predicted organic local flowers are the order of the day as couples become more aware of their carbon footprint. And I was like, amen.
Yes.
That's great.
Well, I have to interrupt you right now and just say thank you so much.
I know.
We've only got a few seconds left and it went by so fast. But I am going to arrange this foliage and take a picture, and I'm going to send it to you. Again, her website is, what is it, slowflowers.com. And she's also got DeborahPrincing.com. And I've got to go.
Thank you, Deborah,
Toxic
so much.
Talk Radio.
Love talking
You're
to
welcome.
You.
Thank you. Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. Be well.